Lunch with Leon is brought to you by Total Care, the UK experts in lifting and testing equipment for commercial vehicle workshops. Visit totalcare.co.uk and learn about their market-leading mobile column lifts, fixed post lifts, brake testers, inspection pits, and more. Total Care, lifting business one vehicle at a time.
And welcome to Lunch with Leon. I'm so glad to hear from so many of you that you're enjoying these podcasts. I've got a really special guest today, and he's special not because he's just a great man in the industry, but also because he was my first guest on Lunch with Leon over a year ago. So to celebrate our first anniversary, I'm really glad to welcome back the Managing Director of Dawson Rentals Bus and Coach, Paul Sainthouse. Paul is also the most recent past president of the Chartered Institute for Logistics and Transport. We always have loads of things to talk about. In fact, the last time he was on the show, he told me off air afterwards he had plenty more to say. So here we are with Paul Sainthouse, part two.
And it's our first anniversary. So back having lunch with Leon is Paul Sainthouse.
So hi, Paul. So congratulations. You are the first person to come back on this show a second time because you were my first ever guest in July 2020. So here we are in July 2021. And I remember when you and I talked after with the recording, you said you only got about a quarter of your subjects off your chest and on the air. So I thought, well, we better come back and do some more, hadn't we?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I'm delighted, Leon. And I really enjoyed the first hour we had. As you rightly say, we didn't really get to talk about everything I would have liked to talk about. Time goes far too quickly. A year's gone by now, and we get a chance to do it again. So that's absolutely fabulous. Yeah, terrific.
So how's business?
Mixed, I would say. Surprisingly good in certain ways. Certain sectors are doing okay. Certain other sectors are a bit more of a challenge. Last time we were talking, I was predicting a recession. It didn't come, I'm very pleased to say. So I think society's doing far better than we predicted. And most people in business have been quite pleasantly surprised about how well we've adapted to very changing circumstances. And particularly in passenger transport, it's a credit to the agility and adaptability of the people that work within it that they've managed to make good in such dire circumstances. It's not been good for everybody, admittedly, and certainly in the discretionary travel market, the coaching market, and maybe the feeder marketplaces, it's been very difficult, phenomenally difficult. I feel ever so sorry for some of those people. But overall, yeah, the passenger transport sector has made a good job in very difficult circumstances. A credit to them. And of course, when we were last talking, they were certainly they and others were being heralded as hero key workers. And really, I don't see that's changed. In fact, they're now phenomenally durable heroes. So I'm even prouder than I was before.
Absolutely. And in the particular case of the coach sector, I mean, obviously, leisure travel is coming back. But presumably, there are still coach operators with some expensive coaches and not much work, I guess.
Absolutely. And as you point out, some of the coaches are phenomenally expensive. I think that the surprising thing is that so many operators have managed to survive. It's interesting. I think whilst I wouldn't say that anybody's taking any pleasure out of it now. I think probably the ones that have got as far as this now are better business people that do understand truly the cost of operating their business, do understand far better actually what a necessity is and what a luxury is within what they operate. And I think going forward, there'll be better businesses for it. That's not the crying the fact that it's been a shockingly bad time for them. And all credit to the people who've done their best to support the coaching industry and the various people that I could name. Candice Mason, for example, who's managed to gain a lot of traction and a lot of attention for the plight of the coach sector. So all credit to her and all of her peers that have made those noises and managed to get Baroness Fear even down to their operating location to listen and understand the problems. But hopefully, as we move forward now, I would like to think the coaching sector will come back stronger, will to some extent be the beneficiary of renewed interest in domestic tourism. I think a lot of people have discovered some fantastic things we have on this island and will be less inclined to ignore them in the future and that may be to the benefit of the coaching industry again. And like I say, they've learned how to survive these circumstances. The last thing I say about the coaching industry, one operator I was talking to discovered that he'd lost less money by not operating all through the winter than he did by trying to trade, because traditionally he always managed to lose a lot of money just trying to make a go of things. What he's learned is parking the vehicles up and just doing routine maintenance, but not actually using them, is actually better for his cash flow. So there's lots of lessons that have come out of this, and it'll be interesting to see where we go. But I'd like to think that coach like so many other sectors, is going to bounce back strong and healthy, and with renewed interest from the public, which is what it really needs.
It's funny you should say that, because that was always the economics we had on sightseeing tours, which is actually, we took rather a lot of money in July, August and September, but sadly we gave it away back again between October and May, June, because the summer was fabulous, but it was a relatively short season. It was just really July, August and September. And 9 months is a long time to keep things going, and 3 months is a very short time to earn all the money. And of course, if you carried on operating during the winter, you were losing money, but you kept the thing together, the product, the staff, and, you know, in general, the business was there to be seen. If you only just came for the 3 months, well, it took you a while to build it all back up again and bring the teams together and so on. So I understand for all these people in seasonal businesses, if you have a bad summer, you are really going to have a tough winter.
No, absolutely right. And I think that most operators would acknowledge that the season has got progressively shorter year on year, the season as it was, and used to run from maybe March through to July as a boom period, and progressively moved from April to June, and then became the end of April until the beginning of June. And before you knew where you were, you really were in this one small snippet. And I suppose it did a reset, really. But hopefully, like I say, there's some light on the horizon for the coach operators. Rest of the profession has either been fortunate support, of course, or has found other ways of working. So all credit to everybody. Like I say, within the passenger transport sector, I'm still phenomenally proud of the way that everybody has found a way to get by. But to be honest, knowing the people, I always knew that's what they'd do.
Yeah, no, I get that. So you and I last saw each other at ITT Hub.
Yes.
Of course, at Farnborough on the 30th of June and the 1st of July. We saw some cracking new vehicles, both buses and trucks, didn't we, as part of ITT Hub. So what was your overall take of the show?
Right, well, interesting. I mean, Leon, I'll be honest, you've been to a lot of shows over the years. I've been to a lot of shows over the years. And quite often it's a social occasion. It's a chance to reconnect. In the case of ITT Hub, genuinely, this was an opportunity to reconnect after such a period where we've been disconnected from each other, except on media like this. It was a chance to see humans again in an environment where there was a relatively normal situation, but something that reminded us actually of what life used to be like and what it will be like again. So that was really positive. I think the thing that my colleagues here would say, if you ask them what I said when I got back, was that for the first time in living memory, I went to a show and came back having learned something. And it's because generally, to be honest, you know, everything's brought to you. But the unique thing about ITT Hub was that it's multidiscipline, and it crosses boundaries that don't normally get crossed if you're in a particular sector or silo. So the interesting thing for me was on the tech side of things, because it really did give me an insight into where we're going, what's going on, where the investment's being made, and what the future potentially looks like, or very probably looks like. And whilst the bus sector that I work in already is at the forefront of some of those advances in technologies, the reality is that it is so much broader than even I anticipated. And I was really delighted that we went. I was really delighted we had an opportunity to exhibit and to reconnect with people. But I think, lastly, the thing that really impressed me was the quality of the visitor. And genuinely, there were key decision makers there looking to look at what the future looks like for their businesses, where they need to go, make strategic choices for their businesses. And to be honest, it's a pretty unique thing for a show to give somebody a platform to do that from. So ever so excited, really enjoyed it. It was great to be involved in something that was new and different. And we'll be back.
Well, that's brilliant news. And certainly I've heard very similar comments from people, that the quality of the visitors was great. The business that people did with each other, you know, between exhibitors, I suppose we might call it E to E business, seemed to go very well. And there was new product. There's the new Wrights all electric vehicle was unveiled at the show, and many of our friends were there with new and exciting products. And the other one that struck me as I was walking up and down the aisles in the inside part of the show, that really there's now a phenomenal choice, isn't there, for things that you can buy or subscribe to, which will help you optimize your business, whether it's your fuel consumption or your driving standards or your accident levels or the way in which you use data. I mean, the days of a trade show being a load of vehicles with one or two stands around the outside for people that sells ramps and hoists and things have gone. At ITT Hub, we just had all these people who will take your data and turn it around a bit and give it back to you in such a way that you've got some much better management tools for your business. And people were talking about scheduling savings, fuel cost savings, maintenance cost savings, everything was there to help people squeeze more efficiency out of their business.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And certainly in the transport sector, we're used to having to work these things out for ourselves traditionally. We'd look at our business and we'd be experts and we'd fathom out how to make it better and better and better. And it's really good that there are now people out there that have the ability to manipulate our data and crunch our data to allow us to do that far more rapidly, far more effectively. And the realities we recognise in our business, the future is going to be data-led. If you look at the big companies, the big organisations, the key people in those organisations now are heads of data. They're not the operations people or the engineering people. They're the heads of data because they're the ones who actually feed back into business exactly what they should be doing. So no, you're absolutely right, Leon. It's good that there are so many experts that we can tap into that will allow us to not only advance our businesses, but ultimately advance the profession and the industry, because we all want to make it better and we'll all be advantaged if it does.
It was very good. And of course, it took place immediately after, like 24 hours after, we reopened the London Bus Museum at Brooklands on the 27th of June. So that's the first time I've run two big events back to back in the aftermath of a pandemic. But again, we've had a great reaction at Brooklands at the London Bus Museum. The new layout is just fabulous. We have a new book out, which Jim Whiting at Capital Transport has produced for us, and he's generously giving all the proceeds of the book back to the London Bus Museum as a charity. And everybody was very happy with that. The event was sold out. We had all the social distancing, we had all the precautions and things. And again, for the first time, vehicle owners, friends, colleagues in the industry came together and saw each other in three dimensions for the first time since probably at least 18 months, if not 2 years. So two very successful events back to back. Personally delighted.
Absolutely, Leon. I was going to say I was delighted to have attended both of those events and had to organise neither. So doubly pleasurable. But I think it's important that you know my vehicle and my view on heritage. And the London Bus Museum and the other transport museums are such a wealth of knowledge and resource, not only for people who are interested in transport history, but people who are looking at the future transport as well, because so much of what we're looking to do now in some form or other may well have been done in the past. And there's so many lessons that could be learned from our predecessors as to what they did, how they approached things, their thought processes, what they tried and what they didn't try from a marketing perspective, from a sales perspective, from a planning perspective, that can really fast track what we look to do today. Now, I know on behalf of the London Transport Museum, you put a presentation on there about being back to the future. And in reality, we're talking about electrification of the UK bus network as part of the government's Bus Back Better scheme. The reality is, similarly, that has all been done before. Last time, it involved physical wires as opposed to batteries. But the reality is that what we're looking to do as a highly innovative society is return to something we had in the 40s, 50s and through to the early 60s, until such time as we decided to replace it with diesel. So the London Bus Museum, London Transport Museum and all of the other transport museums really are a valuable resource for people who want to learn a little bit about the journey that we're on, because it started a long way back and it's going to finish a long way ahead yet.
Well, I remember when we were Capital City Bus, we were the first corporate members of the LT Museum, and I took my Chinese chairman and the inevitable delegation, because when the chairman came to UK, he always came with about 50 people, 45 of whom you'd never see again. But anyway, so we had this big delegation of people, and in we went into Covent Garden, and the premise was to get permission to be corporate sponsors. And he was in and out in about 10 minutes, and I thought, oh my God, this has not gone well. And he just said to me in sort of typical offhand, but he said, yep, we'll do it. Go ahead. And I said, okay, but so quickly, what persuaded you? And he said,
very important Chinese saying, answers to troubles of the future all contained in our history. So he, just what you said, that actually there is so much helpful information and experience in our past, gives us a clue about the future. And as you say, we've been here before with electric. We've been here before with hybrid. We had petrol electric. And whilst the technology has moved on, the science is founded on the same basis. It's fascinating, isn't it, that we got rid of trolley buses and trams because of the new flexible diesel motor bus. But in fact, there's another adjective, which is poisonous. So the flexible but poisonous diesel motor bus is now being replaced by zero emission. So we've just seen the transport decarbonisation plan published this week. I don't know if you've had a chance to read very much of it yet. I'm most of the way through automotive and headed for aviation.
I've not quite got that far through the 200 something pages that it contains, but I've certainly been through the summary. I think that as you'd expect, a variety of different reactions from a variety of different sectors. Rail freight is very pleased. The road freight sector, I think, is somewhat surprised at the optimism of solutions to some of their problems, but it's keen to do it. And of course, road passenger, which gets a big billing to start with, was already defined with the Bus Back Better scheme. I was quite pleased as a passenger transport person to see that the preface to Bus Back Better was from the Prime Minister, whereas the decarbonisation programme comes from the Minister or Secretary of State for Transport. So clearly buses are higher on the political agenda than the rest of the other modes. But we've been through it. Certainly, I mean, as you know, Leo, I'm involved in various industry bodies, and through CIRT, we've been looking at the implications. The various working groups have been looking at their individual sectors. Clearly, it's very ambitious. I think that it's an interesting political document as well, because it's a very long-term roadmap, and governments do tend to work within one or two political terms. This goes much further than that, sets a roadmap for a long-term future. And as far as the successors to the current government go, I'm sure none of them are going to reverse anything that's in there, and it's only been looking to bring it forward and to reduce the timescales that things are implemented over. So I think we've got an interesting time ahead. I think from an automotive point of view, I think that there's going to be a lot of challenges delivering what the society and the government are looking for. I think there's some technical challenges in there. I think from my business point of view, from an asset rental and leasing point of view, I think we've got some interesting challenges on future life of vehicles and residual values. The faster we can get to a stable situation, the better. And I think we discussed that last time. My view that there was a couple of young chaps in California working on the dilithium crystal, which was going to fundamentally change the whole of the automotive driveline. And I still believe that. I still believe there's something coming that we can't yet see, which will also have a material effect. But certainly, I think everybody would recognise the value and the importance of welcoming the decarbonisation programme. There's going to be some winners and losers within that. We've identified that certainly that passenger transport sector will be a winner within that. I think if we're talking about the freight sector, I think they're interested in what technology will support them. And of course, the manufacturers are working on that. But I do think, and it is well publicised at the moment, that they've got some shorter-term issues that they're grappling with. And certainly the inability to recruit drivers is probably something that is the most stifling of things for their advancement. And the reality is that unless they can get the resources to deliver what is already a very fine margin service relatively effectively, then I think trying to work out how they can invest in the long term is going to be a bigger problem for them. So I'm sure that's their priority. What I would say, delighted to see that rail freight is going to get a much bigger part to play in the future. Delighted to see that walking, cycling and all the other healthy modes are still being promoted. And it's the kind of document, if you have a blank sheet of paper and the ability to deliver something that society needed, you were probably right. But yeah, everybody had their own idea of what the correct mix is, I suppose.
I didn't find the reference to road pricing anywhere in there. I'm not sure the words road and pricing are in the document in the same sentence. But as we talked about before, it's going to have to be, because the $38 billion a year worth of fuel duty and VAT that net zero vehicles won't pay. And that $38 billion doesn't pay for roads, it pays for ships and hospitals and aircraft carriers. So that has got to be dealt with soon. Claire Haig was on this programme a couple of shows ago, and she's very keen that the country makes a start onto road pricing. And in fact, she has a particular idea that, in fact, there should be an option to opt out of vehicle excise duty and pay, if you like, pay as you go.
Yes,
because for people who do not very many miles in rural areas, they would be much better off on a pay-as-you-go basis than they would be paying VED. And over time, you could push up the VED
and the fuel duty and encourage people into net zero and encourage people into pay as you go, whilst leaving the old system in place. And I very much remember, I'm old enough to remember when first and second class post was introduced. And the minister was tackled and said, isn't this just a price increase? He said, well, it's a price increase if you want your letters delivered tomorrow. But if you want to pay the old price, you can pay the old price. It's just your letters won't be delivered till the day after. So, and it's a similar sort of thing. You can stick with VED and fuel duty if you want, but there's a new modern way to do it. And I hope we get started on that road soon, because the longer zero emission vehicles carry on and the longer fuel duty income starts to decline, the harder it'll be to replace it with something equitable.
No, absolutely right. I think that the proposal does note in its preface that they're not expecting people to abandon car usage, and that car, the passenger car, will be one of the tools available to you, but you will think about it as to the right mode to use. And certainly road pricing is something that will encourage people to just consider whether that's the best way to get where they need to go, because they will be. It's very much like anything else you buy. If you pay as you go, you've got a choice at that point. If you've already prepaid, you might as well use it. I do see it being an important step forward. I do see it being one of the solutions to dealing with the problem of congestion. If we could deal with congestion through reduced car usage, because people use other choices, then of course what it does do is make some of the other mass transit modes more effective and more efficient. Buses will run faster. More people theoretically will then use them. Passenger car will then become, again, a slightly less viable choice, and we start delivering on some of the things that we know that we need to, because some of these long-term problems have been buried in political terms, and in reality, taking the cars away from people is never going to be a vote winner, but giving people other choices and reminding them of the choices they have, it keeps everybody happy, and certainly does with the way in which society works nowadays, I think.
Lunch with Leon. Your regular chance to join Leon Daniels and an exciting guest from around the world of transport. From itthub.net.
What I did want to mention is the privilege of going to see Secrets of the London Underground, a new UK TV show that's starting on Monday. For a bit of lightheartedness, I really recommend anybody that's interested, not interested in transport, has a look at that, because I saw a preview. It's fascinating. It really does give you an insight into the whole of the way in which London Underground works. Tim Dunn and Cindy Holloway are fantastic presenters. So the first thing I was going to plug was their show. Nothing to do with me, but it really is a good watch. So that's a good thing. Apart from that, I suppose the most important things I would like to get across is the way in which the transport profession and the professional bodies that represent the stakeholders really have performed phenomenally well for their members and for society in the last 12 months. Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport, Federation of Passenger Transport, UK Coach Operators Association, all of these people really have earned their wings as far as their membership is concerned. And I'm involved, connected with some of these organisations in various ways. And it really is amazing how they've stepped up to the needs of their membership. Not always with an enormous amount of thanks, not always pleasing all the people all the time. But some of the things that they've delivered have been remarkable. So I think that I would now consider the voice of the masses when it comes to our profession far more important than it was previously. If I've got one sort of thing to shout from my soapbox now, it really is that we've got a phenomenally good profession. We've got phenomenally good people in it. We've got some really good professional organisations representing various areas in our sector. And we should therefore have a really good opportunity to take these offerings forward, deliver what we know we can for society, for the economy, for the environment, all of the things that mass passenger transport can do for us and other modes can do for us as well. As a result of that, I'm really excited as to what the future holds. I think that out of adversity comes opportunity. And I think we've had 18 months of pretty harsh time. But I do think that we're going to, as a passenger transport profession, do some fantastic things over the next few years. And decarbonisation strategy and the Bus Back Better strategy and what will soon be launched, which is the National Coaching Strategy, will all form part of that. We're going to be far more effective, far more professional, far greater a deliverer of services to society than we ever have been. And that's something that's really good.
And it's interesting, the work we've seen being done inside CILT. And it just reminds us, as indeed ITT Hub at Farnborough reminded us, that for too long, passenger and freight have been too far apart. And this is a very strange thing, really, because it's the same Secretary of State for Transport. It's the same
Department for Transport. It's the same DVSA. It's the same DVLA. It's the same manufacturers. It's the same licensing authority, the traffic commissioners, and it's the same net zero challenge. And I was pleased to see at ITT Hub and in the work that you and I have seen at CILT, that actually now is an opportunity for passenger and freight to come much closer together, because the challenges are the same. We have more in common with each other than we have differently. And I think this is really a time for much closer working arrangements and relationships between the freight sector and the passenger sector. And I was really pleased to see, as I say, in some of the work you and I have seen, and also at ITT Hub, that for the first time, these people are speaking to each other, which is a big step forward.
No, I absolutely agree. And you know that for a number of years, I've been saying that the bus and coach sector has not shared its skills with the freight and transport sector, and vice versa. And really, there is an awful lot that one can bring to the other. And a lot of experience, a lot of technology, a lot of understanding, and they've not worked closely enough. Now, interestingly, now they face the same challenges, but actually the solutions are common, and they're the most expensive bit. So now, as we move forward, the electric propulsion, the hydrogen propulsion, is actually what their challenge is all about. The movement of the goods or the people that are going to be on these vehicles is actually slightly secondary to what they're dealing with. So they do need to work together. They do need the critical mass that both of them bring in order to justify the investment that will be required to deliver these solutions ever more quickly. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're not so unlike each other. We may have evolved or come from different backgrounds, but the reality is that not only do we need each other, but actually we've got an awful lot to offer each other as well.
Would you know, that sounds like a really good place to wind up our conversation, because that's the sort of message we should leave ringing in people's ears, shouldn't we? So I think that's magic. Thank you, Paul. So my guest today has been Paul Sainthouse, who's the Managing Director of Dawson Rentals Bus and Coach. He was the first ever guest to have lunch with Leon exactly a year ago. So it's been great to have Paul back and have another chance to talk over lunch. And now, with lockdown rapidly falling away, and by the time this episode is broadcast, the 19th of July will have passed and the lockdown restrictions will have passed, we can probably have a real lunch, can't we?
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to this for a year now, and hopefully it won't be too far away. But I've got to say, it's an absolute honour and a privilege to be the first guest to come back. I genuinely enjoy these chats. And absolutely. The offer's there. If in 12 months' time we want to do it again, please feel free to ask, because I'd love to.
You can count on that for sure. So, Paul, thanks very much indeed, and goodbye for now.
Thanks, Leo. Good to talk to you.